Okay, good morning, members. Great to see everybody today. I'm going to call the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Ms. Hansen, would you like to take the role? Chair is present.
Chair present. Vice Chair Bonner? Need Albright?
Morning.
Good morning. Representative Bolden?
Bolden present.
Representative Burkle?
Burkle present.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher present.
Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Hansen?
Present.
Representative Keel?
Present.
Representative Liebling?
Present.
Good morning. Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Noir?
Present.
Representative Novotny?
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Pearson?
Pearson present.
Thank you. Representative Pinto?
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
Okay, and our friend Representative Schumacher is excused today, and I see Vice Chair Bonner has entered the Zoom. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. We do have a quorum. Let's see, Representative Albright, would you like to move the minutes from March 3rd, last Thursday?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would make that motion.
Thank you. Representative Albright moves the minutes from March 3rd, 2022. Any corrections or comments on the minutes? Seeing none, please unmute yourself for a voice vote. All those in favor of adopting the minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So members, today we have three bills on the agenda. The first bill is about mental health workforce, and then the second two bills are changing reimbursement formulas for some of our waiver systems. So the first bill we have is House File 3215. Chair Fisher, would you like to make a motion to adopt the division report from Behavioral Health for House File 3215?
Chair Schultz, I'd like to make that motion.
Okay, this is a voice vote, members. Chair Fisher moves to adopt the division report for House File 3215. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. So my motion will be to lay over House File 3215 for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Chair Fisher, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, and thank you, committee, for the opportunity to present House File 3215. This is a bill that is out there to help address the workforce shortage that currently exists in the mental health area. This is to help address the issues for those serving children and adults. There's been a report that's been posted on our website on mental health services workforce crisis. This document was put together and summarizes the findings of the survey carried out by Minnesota's three mental health service provider associations. And it shows how bad the situation is right now and how there's a lack of access for people who need mental health services at this point in time. Our mental health service providers and advocacy groups have been and will continue to work together on our longer term solutions for trying to address the mental health workforce shortage. The bill that we have before us today is providing a stopgap until these other longer term solutions, including the forthcoming and 2023 rate reform recommendations that will be coming from DHS, enacting further regulatory reform through phase two of the mental health uniform service standards, and strongly supporting the targeted pipeline approaches laid out in the much needed Representative Bang Mental Workforce Bill. However, these items are months, if not years away, and given the severity of the current shortage of staff mental health providers are facing right now, it's important that we provide a short-term bridge to help them preserve the infrastructure that we currently have out there until the longer-term solutions are available. That is the intent of House File 3215, to allocate the American Rescue Plan Act funds for one-time payments to community-based mental health providers serving Minnesotans on public programs to help with critical operational and staffing-related needs so we don't lose our current capacity. I've been working on this bill with three mental health provider associations. We've been in communication with DHS on the bill since 2021, and their technical suggestions that they've offered so far are incorporated into the current bill. But we'll plan to continue working together with DHS on any further language issues that they may highlight. I would also like to thank the bipartisan group of lawmakers who have joined me as co-authors on this, particularly Representative Albright, who has signed on also, and I'd like to thank you for that support. I would like now to turn over to several testifiers I have to allow them to explain where we are at this point in time.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. And did you say is it a $60 million appropriation from ARPA?
$62
million. $62 million. Thank you. So the first testifier I have is Kirsten Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Morning. My name is Kirsten Anderson. I'm the executive director of Aspire Minnesota, a statewide association of children's service providers. We are grateful to Chair Fisher for authoring this legislation and this committee for hearing House File 3215. This proposal comes from the collaboration between Mental Health Providers Association of Minnesota, MHPAM, and the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, MACMAP, and is reflective of the great needs and opportunities we see for Minnesota's wider community-based mental health continuum. Every day, we hear about mental health needs. Our workforce, our children, the schools, and all institutional infrastructure. Truly, all of us are impacted by mental illness and the needs for mental health care, today more than ever. From news headlines to personal conversations, we all know our need for mental health care has grown due to the pandemic, and it is critically important to access mental health care when needed because treatment helps us get better. Importantly, mental health treatment requires a field of trained professionals and mission-focused provider organizations to deliver critically needed mental health care. This committee knows well Minnesota's community-based Medicaid rates for services are beneath the cost to deliver care, and our field was in duress prior to the arrival of COVID-19. Despite these ongoing challenges, at the arrival of the pandemic, our mental health providers innovated, collaborated, and asked what else can be done to serve Minnesotans. Providers leveraged federal PPP forgivable loans, philanthropy, creativity, and they kept serving day after day. Those providing the most intensive residential care never stopped serving, showing up daily to serve, never letting down. Telehealth brought additional learnings, benefits, and capacity to serve. In short, Minnesota's mental health providers sustained hope as they served Minnesotans. So much beauty and resilience in this story. Now, today, with the impact of the Omicron variant on top of underinvestment in our community-based mental health continuum, on top of the Great Resignation, our mental health field is facing a crisis beyond definition. House File 3215 is a response to shrinking capacity to serve, including recent spikes and closures of intensive services that includes children's day treatment classrooms and children's residential services as examples. Significant financial losses across the community-based continuum within the past two quarters, and a crisis in access, with a recent point-in-time survey from MACMAP reporting almost 10,000 Minnesotans on waiting lists, despite the fact some organizations have closed waiting lists because they hope that people may find help and services elsewhere. Today's employment market makes competition for staff almost impossible, with other health systems, government, and employers who don't serve our Medicaid enrollees offering salaries that outpace our community-based providers by tens of thousands of dollars for mental health staff, and other roles like youth worker wages and children's residential treatment compensated less than area retail and food service wages. Mission matters as we deliver care, and so does compensation, particularly when we seek to recruit and retain high caliber staff to meet Minnesota's mental health needs. The goal of 3215 is to help stabilize in the near term our currently very fragile critical infrastructure of community-based mental health services, stabilization that will allow us to continue our longer-term reform efforts aimed at restoring lost capacity and pursuing growth to meet the tremendous needs in our communities. The legislation proposes one-time emergency funds that could be used for sustaining direct service operations, hiring and retention bonuses, increases in employee benefits, and providing additional training and supervision. Today, with unprecedented mental health volume and complexity of need, crisis level shortage of workers and the resulting unprecedented service closures, financial pressures, and challenges facing our mental health providers, all compounding together, we are immersed in what is a true defined crisis. And I have good news. First, we know that with mental health treatment, people get better and can live their best lives and make greatest contributions today and into the future. This is good news for all of us. And with your leadership, we can triage today's crisis with the provider relief in House File 3215, passing Representative Vang's House File 3418 to build mental health workforce that Minnesota needs in the future, and supporting the Department of Human Services in the process of building a viable community-based mental health rate structure, With those critical steps, we can envision a future strong community-based mental health care system. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. The next testifier I have is Luke Camus. I'm probably mispronouncing it. Welcome to the committee. State your name and affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and the committee. My name is Luke Camus, and I'm from Southwestern Mental Health Center. On behalf of Southwestern Mental Health and its Board of Directors, I am asking for your support and urge the committee to pass the House File 3215 legislation. Here at Southwestern Mental Health, we serve 2,200 plus individuals per month, and we reach the counties of Pipestone, Rock, Nobles, Cottonwood, and Jackson. And we have physical offices in Nobles and Rock counties. We provide individual and group outpatient therapy, adult rehabilitative mental health services, known as ARMS, behavioral health home services, housing stabilization, and psychiatric care for children and adults. We also provide assertive community treatment with our ACT team and have a 9-bed, 90-day intensive residential program we call Unity House. We are truly in the midst of an operational crisis, specifically due to the workforce shortage in the mental health field and misaligned reimbursement rates, both from the insurance companies and county contracts, both pay significantly lower than our cost to provide the service. We are hemorrhaging due to the rising costs of doing business, such as maintaining staff salaries and benefits. And the indirect costs of maintaining facilities are difficult as well. In 2021, we were forced to end some of our key services and close 3 of our rural clinics due to our financial struggles. We have over 90 clients currently on our wait list, and we've lost over 30% of our workforce to higher paying jobs or been drawn to urban areas, both in and out of state. Our projected loss for 2022 is between $750,000, and in January alone, we were negative $120,000. In closing, there's no backup for our counties if our agency closes. The hospitals, the ERs will be forced to care and absorb the demand for people seeking mental health services. Without immediate relief, the Southwestern Board of Directors, myself, are faced with the difficult task of closing more services and dramatically limiting the access to care that so many individuals are in desperate need of. Thank you so much for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Como. The next testifier I have is Pahu Yang, Vice President of the Wilder Foundation. Welcome to the committee. State your name and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Chair Schultz and committee members. My name is Pahu Yang, and I am the Vice President of Community Mental Health and Wellness at the Wilder Foundation in St. Paul, where we serve over 3,000 children, adults, and their families in the Twin Cities and surrounding areas. I am speaking to you today as a representative of Safety Net Community Mental Health providers across the state who provide critical services to people in our communities every single day. I am here to ask you to support House File 3215, which includes an appropriation for community mental health workforce grants. Our Safety Net Community Mental Health providers are struggling, as you've already heard, with financial losses that were challenging before 2020 and that have been exacerbated by the pandemic, by significant workforce shortages, and by deep operational challenges. The viability of our providers are being threatened across the state. For the first time in my years at the Wilder Foundation, we can't seem to net new hires. Every new hire we have made recently is to cover a position that has gone unfilled. I have several teams that provide intensive mental health services that haven't been fully staffed for 2 years. And that means people who have significant mental health needs aren't being served because we can't staff up to demand. The impact of the recent surge in COVID cases means many of our programs that provide treatment to little kids, to adults with co-occurring disorders, and to our elders can't be served. This means we can't meet the community need, but it also means we have taken significant financial hits. Wilder is just one of many mental health providers throughout Minnesota who have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars because of the pandemic. For some, this funding is the difference between remaining a community resource or closing for good. And the paradox is that at a time when we are experiencing deep financial and workforce challenges, we are seeing people with a greater need, with higher levels of stress and acuity than we ever have before. Recently, one of my providers shared an update with me about one of the families that we serve. Both parents live with significant mental illness and are served in our programs. These are great parents with little ones at home. Mom was just hospitalized. Our providers made sure that dad had food for the family, that rent was going to be paid on time, and that the little ones had diapers. Our team spent extra time with the oldest child, a 12-year-old kiddo, with the entire weight of the world on her shoulders right now, to make sure that she understood that her mom was going to be okay and that we were there to support her family. Because of the support of our team and the family's trust in us, we will be able to avoid eviction, the unnecessary involvement of child protection and other systems, and the family is going to be okay. So while I like to think that my team is special, and they are, I have a great team, they're not unique in that this kind of thing happens thousands of times over and over every day across the state in our community mental health clinics. This is the work that our mental health safety net providers do over and over because we are called to serve our communities. We have been asking 150% of our staff, especially these last 2 years. We can't keep asking more without suffering even greater consequences than we currently are. I urge you to support this bill. We need to ensure that mental health programs across Minnesota can keep critically needed services available. We need your help to support our safety net providers through this time. And please don't let short-term stress undo everything we have done in this state to build a strong mental health system. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yang, and thank you to all of our testifiers. I just want to lift up all the work our mental health therapists and professionals are doing, because even though we're transitioning possibly from a pandemic to an endemic, I think the demand for mental health services is only going to grow. And so thank you all for working in our community on mental health needs. So with that, members, I'm going to open it up for questions for Chair Fisher, for the testifiers. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fisher, thank you for bringing this bill before the committee today. Just a few thoughts and maybe a couple of questions for you. One is, I note on lines 1.19 through 1.22 of the bill, there are a number of nouns that certainly conjure up a number of definitions. And I'm wondering if those are covered in some fashion elsewhere in statute, or are we just using those as a kind of a creative thinking in terms of the possibilities?
Chair Fisher?
Thank you, Representative Albright, for the question. I'm looking at it, you said lines 1.9 through 1.22?
1.19.
Okay, thank you, I want to make sure. Okay, I am recognizing a number of those. I would say I would probably have to defer to DHS to make sure that we provide the correct answer there, but I have seen some of these in other bills and other statutes. But I want to make sure, I want to find out from them exactly if they actually define it.
Chair Fisher, I think Ms. Sunderman is on and might have the answer. Ms. Sunderman?
All right. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, I believe those are all either defined in statute or recognized benefits under medical assistance, so that all of those should be otherwise defined in statute.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderman. Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fisher, on line 2.5, you talk about demonstration to the commissioner of at least 30%. Just a quick question in terms of how was that 30% arrived at?
Chair Fisher?
If I could phone a friend on that one that helped draft the bill.
Would you like Ms. Anderson?
I think Ms. Anderson might be able to help with that one.
Okay, Ms. Anderson.
Chair Schultz, Representative Albright, thank you for the question. You know, we did review the kind of composition of Medicaid and Minnesota Care enrollees that are accessing care from our community-based providers, and struck this as the level that would be inclusive of all the organizations that are missionally oriented to serving our Medicaid enrollees without inadvertently excluding because of the, you know, the composition of wider services within each of the providers. But the point being, sorry, is that we really wanted to make very prominent within the language that the goal is really to assure sustainability for our critical infrastructure serving, especially our Medicaid enrollees.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of quick points. Representative Fisher, the bill talks about grants paid in the proportionality to public program utilization, rather than the total program size or the number of employees. I've not seen that before. I'm just wondering if you could just elaborate in terms of why that methodology was used.
Chair Fisher.
Once again, I'd like to defer that off to Ms. Anderson.
Ms. Anderson.
Chair Schultz, Representative Albright. That was really focusing again on the goal of looking at organizations that have multiple service areas and looking at the proportion as it relates to these mental health areas of service delivery.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question and then completing comments. Representative Fisher, on lines 2.12 through 2.14, you talk about paying these grants out via Medicaid payment system. If we're paying these out as literally kind of advanced payments, do we create issues with the providers?
Chair Fisher?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Albright. When you say create issues for providers, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by what kind of issues we would create for providers.
Madam Chair.
Yep, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Fisher, when dealing with CMS and the federal government, it's all about, making a streamlined approach without a conflict of interest. If we're advancing them payments without the documentation that they have incurred the cost, does that create a dilemma for the providers in terms of reporting back to CMS on these programs?
Chair Fisher.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, when you say a dilemma, are you saying that because they have to report the information back afterwards that would create a barrier for them?
Representative Albright.
From an audit trail, if you're paying before you incur the expense, that's always a kind of a red flag for a forensic auditor.
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Albright. I can say that in terms of the documentation that has to be provided, this seems to be very similar to the way that the federal dollars were being dispersed for other programs last year. I know that after the pandemic hit, that there were other federal dollars that were paid in advance, and the nonprofits that received those had to provide the documentation afterwards, and I was not aware of that there were any nonprofits that were dealing with issues. And in many instances, the nonprofits are very happy to be able to receive the dollars in advance because it helped them with their cash flow situations. And so I think in this situation, it's something that will actually help these smaller clinics, these groups that are usually operating on very thin lines without great cash reserves. This helps them address their cash flow issues, which is very critical at this point in time.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Fisher, thank you for that answer. That persuades me for a number of reasons that this is the way that and the direction that we should be going in terms of funding. You couldn't be more right that this is the time and the moment to get ahead of what's coming, because this pandemic moving to an endemic, but things are going to come out sideways with a lot of people. And so I really appreciate your perseverance and moving this forward. And I hope that everyone on this committee can get behind this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. And Representative Fisher, I certainly want to support your bill, but I have a couple of questions for you. First of all, the bill brief suggests that there may be as many as 20,000 or as few as 12,000 mental health care providers. How many people are we really talking about? Do you know?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sandel, I would defer to Ms. Anderson, who has a little bit more information than I would.
Ms. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Sandel, you know, when we looked at across the writer associations, which is not inclusive of all organizations, and looked at the categories that we really were seeking to support, it looked as though there would be about 700 programs that could be eligible for this relief. And I am sorry, I don't have a count of all of the staff that would be capable of accessing this. But again, it's a pretty pretty significant number of responses and truly statewide.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Where are the healthcare providers who have been working providing services going? And what is the what sort of paid levels are we talking about that people are leaving and going elsewhere?
Representative Fisher or Ms. Anderson?
Madam Chair and Representative Sandel, I can start off with that a little bit and then allow Ms. Anderson to fill in. Is part of the issue that's happening out there is because of the added stress with people providing these services, a lot of people are burning out because of the volume of trauma and the amount of trauma that the clients are bringing into them. So that's one of the areas. Another one is that there's such a shortage in the workforce is that you start getting into a little bit of a pay competition where one place says, I need more people, and so they up the rate. And that's one of the things that's happening out there is the rates are going up. The other thing is we're seeing people who no longer want to work full-time and want to work part-time or not at all. So we've got the baby boomer generation who's starting to retire out. So that also complicates the issue. And from there on, I know that Ms. Anderson can add to this.
Anderson?
Madam Chair, Representative Sandel, Representative Fisher gave a really comprehensive response. I think it's a pretty individualized experience. I will also say that with the rise of telehealth, there is the opportunity to be compensated more and have greater flexibility while working from home. And so we have some national firms that are actively recruiting. And, you know, because of the incredible demand on our mental health space, certainly within those Medicaid services we're speaking directly to today, but really across the board, you know, our folks are going to counties, they're going to hospital systems, they're going to schools, they're going to any number of other places, including putting up their own shingles early in their careers because they, you know, it's hard to argue with compensation. And so mission matters, culture matters, but when we have competitive salaries at truly tens of thousands of dollars over the what's able to be offered in our community-based settings, it makes for a challenging environment.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Representative Sandel.
Chair Schultz, again, the bill brief says that the grant would not go to hospitals. Does that include clinics, for example, healthcare or Allina that provide mental health services?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Representative Sandel, I will defer that off to Ms. Anderson, who will have a better understanding than I would.
Ms. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Sandel, that is my understanding. If they're operated within the confines of a hospital, if the hospital then itself has other clinics that are kind of more scattered, like a Rule 29 clinic, then that organization, a part of the infrastructure, I believe would be eligible. So I'm certainly not expert in this topic.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Just one other quick question. I think the work is terrific, Representative Fisher. Is there something that this committee might do or might suggest or support to encourage workforce development in the area?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. I think some of the big things that we can do has been Representative Baines' bill that came through. I think that's one of the things that was very critical. I think another part is just taking a look at the, and this belongs more actually, I believe, in Representative Liebling's committee than here, is what we have for reimbursements under Medicaid and those areas. You know, that's where a lot of it comes down to is the reimbursement rates as we've been hearing are below what the costs are actually being delivered out there. And so, and once again, these are longer term things to be able to figure out, but we have to make that commitment to provide the dollars going forward if we want to continue to build a mental health system that does not really exist out there as it should.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've been very patient.
Okay, thank you. That's because we have extra time today. Okay, thank you, Chair Fisher. Any closing comments?
I want to say thank you to the committee for the opportunity to present 3215 today. And I'd like to say a big thank you to all the testifiers out there for coming forward and sharing their experiences. And I look forward to this being incorporated into a bill, hopefully at the end of session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. With that, members, The bill, House File 3215, is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Okay, members, the next bill on our agenda is House File 3157. This is Representative Mueller's bill. And I see that you have a DE1 amendment, and it's technical, but it's a DE1. Would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, so moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Mueller moves the DE1 amendment. Everyone, please unmute yourself. This is a voice vote. All those in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment to House File 3157, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Mueller, to your bill as amended. And the motion is going to be to lay over House File 3157 to be included for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Go ahead, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So over the years, the legislature has discussed increased access to the supports that enable Minnesotans with disabilities to seek and maintain competitive, integrated employment in our communities. House File 3157 is intended to move us towards that important shared goal. The bill was brought to me by MORE, the statewide association of organizations that provide disability employment and day enrichment supports to Minnesotans with disabilities. And specifically, the bill aims to increase access to important services called employment exploration. Employment exploration services focus on helping people with disabilities understand and gain exposure to competitive, integrated employment options. In 2018, Minnesota added 3 employment services to its waivers. The base wage for employment exploration services was set lower than for employment development services, and this bill makes a change to align the base wage for employment exploration services with that of development services. The bill does have bipartisan support, and Madam Chair, I do have a testifier, Mike Burke.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. So we'll go to the first testifier, Mike Burke. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mike Burke, and I'm a director of operations of a nonprofit organization called Productive Alternatives based in Fergus Falls. We serve nearly 500 Minnesotans who have disabilities each year in a geographical area from Moorhead over to Brainerd and everything in between. Our organization supports Minnesotans with disabilities to reach their employment and other day enrichment goals. I am also on the board of MORE, the statewide association of organizations providing these services throughout the state. MORE brought forward the legislation before you to build upon a current effort at the state level to best support Minnesotans with disabilities to live, work, and engage in their communities as independent as possible. We have been working on this bill for several years, now coupled with the real workforce shortage and crisis that we've all heard about today. We're experiencing the same thing in the disability services field, and it's more important than ever that we find ways to increase access to the services that support Minnesotans with disabilities to be independent as possible. A little background that Representative Warren Mueller also touched on is the change for this proposal in this bill really relates back to 2018 when 3 new services became available to our clients to support Minnesotans with disabilities to find and keep integrated employment in the community. The 3 new services focus on first exploring a competitive integrated work in the community. The next is developing job opportunities. And the third would be finally maintaining those jobs once they've been found. For providers of disability employment supports, it is really exciting to have these 3 new services specifically supporting the competitive work in the community. As a crucial first step, employment exploration services focus on helping people understand and gain exposure to competitive integrated employment options. This service uses career exploration to better inform choice. People with disabilities learn what competitive integrated employment is, what it means to them, and what job opportunities there are. They are supported in exploration interest, gaining knowledge and skills, and even taking part in work experiences. When these services were implemented, a lower base wage was set for this employment exploration service. Having the first of these three services with a lower base wage has made it challenging for providers to offer this critical first step in even taking part in work experiences. When these services were implemented, a lower base wage was set for this employment exploration service, which then created a difficulty for providers to take that first step. It's that initial step when we know nothing about employment that really, really matters to Minnesotans with disability. It is difficult to find staff to work at these lower wages. With limits to our ability to provide more people access to this very important service aimed at exploring competitive and community-based work, this service has the potential to be a stepping stone for many individuals in choosing to thrive in their communities through competitive work. But it's impossible to carry out without talented staff to provide this service. At my organization, we see incredible changes in people's lives when competitive employment is obtained. It increases access to and inclusions in their communities. Self-esteem is built and empowerment gained from earning wages and becoming more independent. Thriving in community employment increases personal relationships at a broader network of coworkers and friends is established. Offering employment exploration services extends this potential opportunity to explore competitive employment for more Minnesotans with disabilities. This bill proposes one change: to align the standard occupational codes used to form the base wage for this specific service with that of employment development, the subsequent service that an individual accesses when they are ready to move from exploration to securing a competitive community-based job. This rate alignment would better position providers to attract and deploy experienced and well-trained staff to provide employment exploration services to those interested in exploring integrated jobs with competitive wages. We ask for your support for this specific and concrete step that the legislature can take to help move us closer to a statewide goal of best supporting Minnesotans with disabilities to live, work, and be as independent as possible, which again is more important than ever in this time of the disability services staff shortages. Thank you for your time today, and I welcome questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. We also have Ms. Noren here, available with questions if you have them. I have a couple questions for either Mr. Burke or Ms. Noren. What is the current base wage for employment exploration versus what's the current base wage for career development?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Burke?
Yes, Madam Chair. The current employment exploration rate is $19.84. And the base wage for employment development is $24.13.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. And can you tell me a little bit about what qualifications a person would need to do employment exploration versus the qualifications for someone who does career development?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Noren?
Mike, do you want me to take that? Yes. My name is Lynn Noren, and I'm the president of an organization called RISE, also a member of MORE. And one of the things that we've learned since these services were implemented in 2018 is that the qualifications for doing employment development and employment exploration are very much the same. People need a pretty high level of business acumen as well as good customer service skills, because they're really interacting with community employers and trying to creatively set up opportunities for people to explore potential employment. So for example, at RISE, we have business partners where someone may come to us and say they might be interested in IT, for example, and we can set up several work experiences for them to just see what an IT professional does. But that takes a pretty high level of business skills to understand the employer's needs as well as supporting the individual with a disability. So for us, the same person would be doing both of those jobs, and they're called employment consultants. And so having a different base wage rate makes it difficult as a business to build different levels for this and try and afford that high level staff.
Thank you, Ms. Noren. Chair Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I, kind of following on the chair's questions, it makes a lot of sense what you are asking for, Mr. Burke. I'm, you know, what you explained makes a lot of sense, but I'm just wondering, why was this set lower in the first place? Maybe that kind of goes to what the chair is asking as well. Do you know why this was set lower?
Ms. Noren?
Representative Liebling, Chair Schultz, when the employment services were rolled out, we really were presenting new services, right? So we didn't have a history with what the wage rates would look like. And so we did, I think, our best work, as we do with everything else in DWRS, and looked at whatever information was available. But because they were new and we haven't had a chance to have cost reporting results yet, we did our best to kind of set the wage. So really the employment exploration wage rate today is the same as employment support. And it really requires a completely different skill set, more like employment development. So I know that's, it's just complicated, but it's the way the system rolled out the services. We just didn't have a lot of information because they were new services.
Chair Liebling. Okay.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Any other questions for members? Not seeing any. Representative Moeller, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the to my testifiers today. And I'll just say, as we talk about the workforce shortage and hearing the testimony, I was thinking about workforce shortage from two perspectives here, both the workforce shortage for people to provide these employment exploration services at that lower rate, and then also addressing the workforce shortage for people with disabilities who want to be in the communities working and filling open vacancies. So I think it's a really great bill, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. So House File 3157, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Okay, members, the last bill on our agenda is House File 3100. Representative Hansen, I see that you have a DE1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment to get it in the proper shape before you discuss it?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hansen moves the DE1 amendment to House File 3100. This is going to be a voice vote, members. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the DE1 amendment is adopted. And this bill, House File 3100, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to be authoring House File 3100 and presenting this to you today. This is a very important bill to the disability community, both for people who receive services and people who deliver them. We've heard lots of variations of bills calling on us to do more to support direct support professionals. Year after year, the conversation comes up at the legislature and we find ways to do what's needed in that moment and for that time and until the next crisis hits. This bill seeks to resolve some of that. To put it simply, if we as a state believe in honoring the dignity and worth of Minnesotans with disabilities, and if we value their ability to live full and meaningful lives, our state set reimbursement rates must reflect our beliefs. This bill seeks to set reimbursement rates at a level that will pay for the staff supports necessary to act on this belief. This bill proposes updates to the DWRS, which is the Disability Waiver Rate System. DWRS is the rate setting methodology for home and community-based waiver services for people with disabilities. These services include a wide spectrum of residential, employment, day enrichment, and other support services that are provided by DSPs or direct support professionals. And they assist and empower Minnesotans with disabilities to live full and meaningful lives in their communities. The Best Life Alliance brought this legislation forward to make impactful, data-informed changes to the DWRS system. These changes will move our state forward in addressing the current widespread shortage of critical staff who provide hands-on disability services. This bill proposes that we use more current economic data to inform updates to specific factors included in the DWRS. And these factors include services that are based on standard occupational code data, consumer price index data, and data from the competitive workforce analysis carried out by the Minnesota Department of Human Services. This committee is well aware that our state is in the midst of an incredibly challenging disability services workforce shortage. We've heard the stories of families and from people with disabilities calling on us to create change and to better support those among us who are the most vulnerable in our state. While workforce shortages are happening throughout various industries, workforce shortages in the disability services space mean that Minnesotans with disabilities are not able to live full lives, let alone the lives they choose and want to live. These extreme staff shortages hinder every aspect of their lives. Members, across the state, group homes are closing. Vital support services for people living independently are going unrendered. And employment and day support programs face long waiting lists as their capacity to serve shrinks. Currently, the Department of Human Services estimates there's over 20,000 DSP positions open across the state, and we fear that number will continue to grow as more DSPs leave this rewarding work for lower stress and higher paying jobs. We must increase the state's set reimbursement rates to allow for staff wages and benefits that don't fall below those of our local fast food and other local retail work opportunities like they do today. These are meaningful and important jobs that we must respect and honor by taking action on meaningful changes like this bill offers. The investments made last session to the DWRS were greatly appreciated by staff and people receiving the services, and it's no secret that things would be much worse had we not extended that support. We made important changes that aim to move our state toward a more independent and community-based service modality. However, the disability workforce shortages have continued to worsen. And it's gotten to the point where the basic promise to offer disability waivered services that actively support people where and how they want to live is very much in jeopardy. This is a bipartisan effort, and I want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you for supporting this bill, but more importantly, thank you for supporting people with disabilities in Minnesota. Thank you for hearing their needs, their calls for action, and thank you for helping me move this forward. And with me, I have a number of testifiers who are going to tell you a little bit more about this workforce crisis. And so I'll turn it back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. The first testifier I have on my list is Tracy Murphy. Welcome to the committee. State your name and affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Hi, I'm Tracy Murphy. I'm the president of Mount Olivet Rolling Acres. We are a disability services organization that supports over 3,000 people with disabilities. We do in-home supports, day program support. We are the only provider of crisis services in the Twin Cities. We have summer camps, as well as we do case management for Hennepin County, Dakota County, Anoka County, and Goodhue County. However, I'm really here today to talk about our group homes and our DSPs, our direct support professionals. We operate 32 group homes, and if I were fully staffed, I would have 500 staff. I want to be really clear, we are not the same as nursing homes or assisted living. We are a 245D Medicaid provider. Because of this, we have not gotten or have been included in any of the long-term care funding that has happened through Medicare because we are Medicaid. And we are sort of a hidden sector and a forgotten sector. Representative Hansen and then Kirsten and Luke and everyone who testified for the mental health, I could just pick that up and drop that right on to disability services as well. So let me give you some facts about where we're at with MORA, which is what we call Mount Olivet Rolling Acres. We were in emergency staffing levels prior to the pandemic. We currently have 80 open positions. I have had 80 open positions for over 4 months. We operate with 30 to 50% of our shifts being open. We are 24/7, 365. We are caring for people all day long, every day of the year. And we are doing this with absolute minimal legal coverage. These folks are not living their best lives, and our staff are working in many cases, upwards of 80 hours a week to keep them safe and keep them in their own homes. We meet daily to talk about what shifts are open in the next 24, 48, and 72 hours. Yesterday, I worked for 3 hours in our adult day program because we didn't have staff. Tomorrow, I'm scheduled to work for 4 hours in one of our group homes because we don't have staff. I have directors working overnights. I have case managers filling in for shifts outside of their normal work hours. I have some of our crisis managers, my HR generalist, my IT person. Overall, we have 23 people who are not direct support professionals who have other jobs with us who are picking up shifts because we are so short-staffed. Our programs temporarily, our respite program in a home in Chanhassen, and we have 3 other homes where people are going home on weekends when they can and or their guardians are coming in to care for them because we do not have the staff to do that. So we are augmenting basically with guardian care as well. I'm sure you're going to ask me what our base salary is or our base wages. So I will just pop to that right away. Through Medicaid, we are reimbursed at about $14.35. Our starting wage is $14. My average wage right now is well over $20 an hour when you start to include people's education, their experience, as well as we have some really hard to fill shifts, including nights and weekends. We really, really need you guys to pass this legislation, and not just this legislation. We need a full full overhaul of our sector, how work is valued, how we're reimbursed, how we're monitored, how we're educating people. $14 an hour to help someone brush their teeth, get showered, get to their work, get to their day program. I mean, why? Why would people do that? People's hearts are big, but they're not that big when they can go to Target now and make up to $25 an hour. We're not even competing in our own sector anymore. We are competing with retail, fast food, restaurants, et cetera. When you talk about the impact this has had on staff, of my 12 direct reports, so senior directors, 4 have left my organization in the last 5 months. 1 because of mental health challenges this work brought on, and she's currently not working. 1 retired early. 1 took a step down and decelerated her career and is in a role not as large. And another moved into another sector and actually moved into nursing care. We are, that's 25% of my senior leadership team. I am extremely grateful for the DWRS increase last year, but I want to put it into perspective. It was an 8.5% increase, but it wasn't on all the services we cover, and it wasn't for all the positions we have. So for instance, it didn't include any of the nursing support. So the 8.5% increase was $150,000 impact on a $40 million budget. Let me have that sink in. It sounds like a lot. It was 20 cents an hour. So if I were to take my starting wage from $14 to $17, and fairly compensate everyone else in the organization proportionately, I would need to find another $3 million of revenue every year on top of my $40 million of revenue. I just don't know where that's going to come from. My budget this year has me ending the year with $300,000 of net income. On a $40 million budget, that's a rounding error. We need help. And Christina Kirshner, I know, is going to be testifying soon. She is with us. She will tell a more personal side as one of our supervisors of direct care, as well as a family member. So thank you for allowing us to testify. I know it's dire. It really is.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy. The second testifier is Christina Kirchner. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Christina Kirchner, and I run a respite site for Mount Olivet Rolling Acres. My site's located in Bloomington, and we serve children and adults with disabilities from Thursday evening until Sunday evening. Many of the people we serve come once per month, and this opportunity gives parents and caregivers a much needed break from the daily cares associated with caring for someone with a disability. I'm here to tell you about the realities our industry is facing, but this problem's been brewing a long time. In 2014, I decided to take 2 jobs in the direct care field for a total of 60 hours per week because I loved working direct care, and that way I could kind of afford my bills. Over half the staff I worked at the day program had 2 jobs. Then in 2015, I became a mom, and not only did I think it was unfair for my daughter to have me working that much, but my income couldn't support paying for daycare. So I took some time off. In 2019, I found my job at Mount Olivet Rolling Acres. In May of 2020, we were asked to shut the doors to our respite program so that we could follow the CDC and MDH's guidelines to help keep individuals safe. We stayed closed until April of 2021. During the time we were closed, I served on our COVID response team with my company. We put together the team of just a couple people to help cover staffing gaps when a house had a positive client. While we were closed, our respite program was closed. About half the individuals that had attended moved into group homes because their parents weren't getting any help with respite or PCA services or day programs. As with many businesses, there were several people in our company that decided to take an extended leave of absence during COVID. There were also some that opted for an early retirement. When we had COVID positive people in a home, we had another wave of people that would leave because they were uncomfortable working with
I think we just lost the connection to our testifier. I do have a third testifier on my list. I don't know if, is Matt Guidry here? There you are. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Chair and committee members, thank you. My name is Matt Guidry. I'm the father of a 30-year-old young man who lives with significant physical and cognitive disabilities. Like any adult, my son Caleb wants to live with dignity and safety where he chooses, be with friends and family, enjoy all that Minnesota and the Twin Cities have to offer, and live a rich, full life. According to the Minnesota Olmsted Plan, the state of Minnesota should be ensuring that people with disabilities can live, work, learn, enjoy life alongside everyone else in the community. And I quote directly from our own state's website with that. And these goals have been ripped out from underneath the fabric of Caleb's life and many others in our disability community on so many levels. It's now been 2 years since Caleb has been able to attend day programming at MSS, where he used to spend 4 days a week in community with his peers. And even after MSS reopened in-person services in 2021, they've not had the staff to support Caleb. And MSS was the place where Caleb found a social community outside of his own home and family. And without the community of MSS, there's a hole in Caleb's life that can't be filled. And then in November of 2021, because there was not enough staffing to support a safe environment, Caleb's group home was shuttered. And not only was Caleb uprooted from his home and his friends of 12 years, but he also lost the people that know him and respect him, which is something that people with disabilities don't find in many places, unfortunately. One morning, a moving van came and took Caleb and all his belongings to a different house where he knows no one and where no one understands his form of communication. And from Caleb's perspective, I'm sure the move came suddenly, without warning, and with no apparent cause. And I just want you to imagine how scary that would be. At the heart of this issue is the egregiously low pay of direct support professionals, or DSPs, who provide every intimate care in Caleb's life, as they do for so many others. But DSPs not only provide frontline care for Caleb's personal and medical needs, but they are also the ones that ensure that Caleb lives his best life, something this state wants to provide if we are to believe the Olmsted Plan. And if action is not taken to ensure DSPs can earn a living wage, then that entire infrastructure will crumble under around us and with that around under Caleb's way of life. And I'm here today to urge you to support the Best Life Alliance proposal, House File 3100, which is aimed at guaranteeing competitive wages and benefits for our direct support professionals. Our state is facing a disability service staffing disaster. It's on level with a natural disaster, where service organizations are absolutely losing the ability to provide support for the disability community. We must put focus onto the fact that Caleb and others in the disability community are slowly losing their entire way of moving through life, a way of life that relies on a web of supports that ensures independence and community, something not so different than my life or yours. Main difference, however, is that we don't have a value for the community that supports Caleb and as a result for him. And I know we've all been through astounding challenges over the last 2 years, but what Caleb has been through is unthinkable to most. His situation does not have to be inevitable, though. I urge you to support the Best Life Alliance proposal, House File 3100, as it's the first step towards averting disaster. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Guidry. And I'll just note it is the Best Life Alliance Day on the Hill, so you will be hearing lots of stories, I'm sure, similar to Caleb's. I hope not as many. Really apologize for what your son has had to experience, Mr. Guidry. I'm seeing that, Ms. Murphy, did you have a follow-up to your statement? Your hand is raised. And you're muted. She's also has a bad connection. There you go, Miss Kirshner, did you want to finish your testimony? Your internet got cut off.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. You might want to turn off your video because your connection is bad.
Let's see here. Oh, is there? All right. So, was working on the COVID response team, this often left me with just a couple of other staff that were able to work. Worked long hours. I sometimes brought individuals to the hospital, cared for them while they were on hospice. It was not easy the whole time. I knew these individuals would much rather be with the staff that they knew and the staff that knew them. However, not scared as much as a staffing crisis we are going through right now. This last year and the chronic underpay that we've seen has left us whole. Our company is really struggling with 80 time positions open. My respite site and other houses have closed, as Tracy explained. As a supervisor, I struggle with holding people high standards. Can't really imagine someone was late when I know they're under stress like everyone and could easily make more money working fast food. We are struggling with ethical questions. Can I really approve 70 hours per week when I know that staff is going to bother to do anything with the class above their minimum? Did I pick up an extra shift or is 52 hours enough? After all, I do have a six-year-old to raise. Can I really give these people the care they deserve after working 50 hours this week? The first week in January, I worked 78 hours in a week. I was supposed to be supervised, but almost every one of those hours was spent caring for clients because we were so short-staffed. I have another coworker that same week who worked 79 and a half hours and another who worked 60. It's not healthy and it's not sustainable. When you call your six-year-old to say good night and you tell she's crying because it's you that much, that is too much. A lot of really great people had it, and when they leave, they are not coming back. If I make one today, I want you to hear this. It is a huge struggle to find good staff. Most good people leave because they had enough. They are not coming back. So we wait is a day quits and never comes back. So I just want to say that this is the time to do what's right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kirshner. And I just want to thank all of those staff who are working long hours to take care of people with disabilities in Minnesota. So thank you. Any questions for Representative Hansen or for the testifiers? I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Hansen. Oh, here we go. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you to the bill author for carrying this forward. I was pretty excited to be able to sign on to it. And testifiers already kind of hit on the point that other employers out there, such as Target offering $24 an hour starting wage in select markets. Down in Mankato, I had a distribution center just, you know, publicize that they're going to have starting wages at $30 an hour. And so I actually just got an email this morning from a constituent on this bill, and I'm just going to take two sentences from it. And it says, as you know, providers have been facing its most critical staff shortage and have a DSP vacancy of 30%. It is beyond a crisis point, and the industry is losing so many good people due to burnout and the fact that they can easily find jobs that pay more than what they currently own or earn. And so I say this is an incredibly important piece of legislation. We need to support the people that are doing the work, and I was happy to sign on. So thank you, Representative Hansen, for carrying this bill.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. And I'm just grateful there's so many more legislators now that understand DWRS and are working within the framework, because I know how difficult and complicated it is having put in the competitive workforce factor. Okay, Representative Hansen, I'm not seeing any more questions. Any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. And mostly, thank you to the folks who have come forward to advocate and push for this, both for, like you, Madam Chair, who came before us to work so hard to set up the pieces that we needed to move this forward today. But the reason that we're able to do this is because folks are coming together. And I just want to highlight this as an opportunity to say, this is the good work we can do when we listen to the needs of the people on the front lines and the people who are receiving these. And as a member of the disability community, it just means a lot to hear our legislators and the state of Minnesota hear our voices. And so I just want to say thank you again to community members, and I appreciate your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, and thank you to all the testifiers that we've had today. So with that, members, House File 3100, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. So members, with that, tomorrow we have several bills on the agenda, and Thursday our agenda is pretty full. So I'm looking forward to hearing more bills this week and next week. And with that, members, we are adjourned. I will see everyone tomorrow.